Accession number 32394, Mr. Don Farrington, Reel 2. Now, before we go on to when you actually called up in October, a bit about life in Manchester during the war. How did the war affect you, you know, in your daily life, in the co-op and the rest of it?
Before I went in?
Because there's almost, there's more than a year of that before you actually go in.
I don't really, it's very difficult to assess what you felt like then. You knew that sooner or later you were going in the Air Force, and I think in one respect you felt a bit more confident, because at least you knew that you were going to go, not be forced to go in some part of the services that you didn't want to go in. I think that was quite a safer sort of feeling, if you like, that at least you know that, all right, if something happens in the Air Force, well, so be it. But you would have been, and I would have been, very anxious if I'd had to go in the Army or the Navy.
Did people know you'd volunteered?
Oh, yeah, well, they did.
But other people, I mean, people at work and things.
Oh, yeah, yes. Well, the people that, and a lot of my mates were doing the same. We had, like I say, this group of six people that had stuck together. Each of us individually made his own mind up. But I think out of the six, at least four went into the Air Force.
Now, so what about effects of, I mean, did you have any air raid precautions in your part of Stockport?
Yes, well, we had an Anson shelter, which we
an
had
Anderson to, shelter?
No, Anson. It was a small steel built thing you had to dig and put in.
Now,
to
did
the,
you actually
the back
do
garden,
that?
My father and I did.
So tell me a bit more about it. I think they are Anderson shelters.
I think, yeah,
I think
it could
that's
be Anderson.
Anson. Yeah, it sounds like it. Half circle.
That's the one. Yeah,
can you Anderson. Describe how you put it in?
Well, we had to do a lot of digging because it had to go very firmly in on the sides. Between us, we managed to do it. We hadn't got a garden. We just had enough room to get this Anderson shelter put in, just about enough.
So it's more a backyard than a garden.
Yes, that's all it was. Yeah. So
how deep did you get it? How deep did you go?
Oh, I can't remember now.
So what was it like when it was in to go in when you went in?
All right, fine. Yeah.
Was it dry?
It was dry. Yes.
It didn't flood.
Yeah. No. In the end, we went in every time the alarm went, but after so many non-events, when nothing happened at all, we decided to be brave and stay where we were, inside the house, because what we got in the house, we felt was just as safe as the Anderson shelter. We had a cellar, and that was some comfort, that we could always nip down to the cellar, feel probably just as safe if it was outside in an Anderson shelter. That was how the thinking went.
Now, did you have a blackout? And if so, how did your parents do it, or you do it?
Yeah, we put all things, sort of things, up at the windows. Yeah, black curtains and strips against on the glass itself.
Stop it shattering. Well,
that's
to
right,
stop
yeah.
it coming.
Yeah.
Now, what was it like when you were out in the blackout? I mean, because you were old enough to be out when it was dark. What was it? I mean, that winter of 1939-40. What was it? I mean, could you see where you were going?
I can't remember a great deal about that part of it. I remember the blackout very well, but I don't remember. Perhaps it was we didn't stray very far out at night, when it was really bad, because, I mean, let's face it, you can't do much about it when you can't see your way about. The same with cars and things like that. If they had a car in those days, you were a millionaire. And they had to have hooded things on the lights, you know, the car lights had to be sort of protected. But as far as, I think, like in my age group, I can't think of anything really that we did. I can't even remember whether we went to a cinema or not because of it.
Now, what about air raids? Did you have any air raids on Stockport while you were there?
Not while we were there.
No. None at all?
No.
What about rationing? How much did that affect you and, you know, food and clothing rationing? Or did you just not know?
Well, I think it's something you grow into. I don't think you can say, well, it was like so-and-so. It was something that eventually you knew what you could get each week, because if your rations were so much bacon, so much butter, so much sugar, or whatever it was, and that was it. And so you had to, and my mother was very good. And this is where, again, my mother was really good, because from a point of view of making things, she was great. The only failing she had was passing on, she passed it on to me, that she liked everything sweet. It must, if you had a cup of tea, you have to have at least two spoonfuls. That was a cup of tea. So I'm afraid I got the sweet tooth from my mother. But
so the food recipe, she made good for you. I mean, what about clothing? Was that?
Well, clothing, again, you didn't bother about. But if we haven't got it, we haven't got it, and we got on with it. It's like when you were going to school and things like that, you never really had a lot of clothes, but you got on with it.
Now, did the war affect your life at work at all, you know, at the cooperative society, or did it just carry on the same?
No, you just carried on the same, really. That,
so the next thing, really, is when you volunteer, but you're called up to go, and that's in October, I think it was.
21st, Nelson Day, 21st of October.
Now, tell me about that. What happened when you, where did you go? What happened?
excuse me. Oh yes, that's right, I remember now. Through the post, call-up papers arrived, and it was to be posted to Blackpool on the 21st of October 1940. And then the first thing we did, well, at least I did when I got there, we were given the addresses of our billets, which was in Ginn Square, somewhere near Ginn Square in Blackpool. The second thing is we had to get together for a thorough medical, including a few jabs, which included...
Now, hang on. Tell me about the billets. What were the billets like?
Now, the billets, we had... I must confess, there were about six of us, well, not six of us, there were a few of us who got together, and we were selected to go together to this establishment in Ginn Square, or just off Ginn Square.
Now, is this a B&B, a boarding house?
It would be, yes. So, we went to, we were sent to this address, she sat us all down at the table. This was during the first one was in the evening, like tea time. There was nothing much on the table, and we kept waiting for something to come through. And no, so she brought some bread and butter in, and that was the tea. They had the pots of jam, and that was your tea. We couldn't believe this. We thought, crying out loud, she's getting rations for all these people. You know, for I can't remember how many there was. There was about at least four or five of us going in the one establishment. So eventually we thought, all right, we'll leave it. And for the first 2 days, we weren't given anything hot. And it was basically a variation of the different types of bread and the different types of jam. And so we rebelled. We reported it to the people concerned, and they said, oh, can't have this. So they went to investigate, and she said, well, I can't afford to do this, that and the other. what are you getting the money in? So they said, right, well, we'll move you now. So they moved us, you wouldn't believe the difference, they moved us into another establishment, not far away from there, still in the Ginn Square area. And the woman was herself charming. From day one to the time we left, she was absolutely fabulous. We had a wonderful bed. Oh, yes. So
that How many were sharing the bill at each room?
There'd be, I think there'd be two in each room. I think there were about four of us again. But I won't be absolutely sure about numbers. But I think the reception we got was a good omen. And the second thing is, oh, she did make some marvellous homemade fish and chips. And I thought after that, we were well made. The variation of food was a credit to her. And so we went from the sublime to the ridiculous.
Now, what about kitting out? And did you get kitting out?
Yeah, kitting out was after we'd had the medical.
Tell us about the medical first. You had another medical.
The medical was a quick one to give you various jabs.
Well, how we did had they affect typhoid. You? Some of those can affect you.
Stiff arm, and you couldn't raise your hand above your head, sort of thing.
So it got you then that way.
Oh yes, yeah.
And did it get everybody, or was some?
Oh, more or less, yeah. Most people suffer from that. Sometimes they suffered more, and that had to just stay away from duty for a full day. But depends how it affected you.
Did you get your hair cut then as well?
Well, we got the hair cut somewhere. I don't know, somehow. Yes.
But you don't remember it,
No, I don't remember much
about
it.
Now, tell me about kitting out.
Well, kitting out was quite funny, because you can imagine, can't you, all these characters all waiting to be get the right size and everything, because that affected everything. Affected your outer garments and inside and your inner garments and all the types of clothing you would need, Air Force colours and things of that kind. That was all done.
Did it fit you?
It was done with a certain amount of hilarity, I think, because the one thing about it was, you knew that if something eventually, when you tried it on, didn't fit, you just take it back again, get it changed. So there was no difficulty, which we all realised. You can't expect things to go so smoothly when they're giving kit out to all these different sizes. But from my point of view, we just had a good laugh about that. But we eventually got what we wanted.
Now, where that was your kitting out. Now, you were living at the at your billets in yes. Square. Now, what about where would you actually meet for training? How was
now we were fortunate, because where we were billeted was right by I can't remember what the name of it is. I don't know whether you know Blackpool all that well.
Is that the
Well, you know the do you know Ginn Square, whereby there's a war memorial or something, and just on the there's an inner circle where a lot of the coaches used to go and park, and it's a big sort of circular that they did all our basic exercise or training in that area. And once we finished once we finished there, we had to go and march on the promenade up and down. And that's where most of the exercises were done.
Now, how did you take to drill? Because one of the ones you're doing most is just normal drill, foot drill. Yeah. So how did you take to it? You'd never done it before, I presume.
No. I enjoyed it. I've got to be open about it. I quite enjoyed it. One thing it did ensure that you were fit. And don't forget this, he had to go out in all kinds of weather. They didn't put them off.
So you didn't have any trouble with marching and drill?
No, not a bit. No, I was quite...
And you quite liked it?
And not only that, you must remember the one big factor in all this is when you get together, you're not the only one that's suffering, if there's anything to go to suffer about. You're there together. And I think it's this bonding of people. You know you're in it, and you know you've got all the same problems and facilities that everybody else has got.
So these recruits, were there any you remember in particular, or were they, you got on well with all of them, did you?
I did quite, yes. I don't think at that stage there was any one particular person. There was one or two.
Bullying or trouble?
No, none of that. No.
And your bond, comradeship was very important.
Oh yes, it was very good. Yeah, I don't think there was any doubt about it. We all realised what kind of position we're in, and we didn't seem as though we got any of the rough end at all, which you could have done quite easily. Which was the bullying type. Maybe I was very fortunate.
Now, what were the instructors like?
Instructors varied. Some of them were tried to bully you with tactics, bullying tactics. Others were quite decent. Well, just go around clipping your head. We said, you know, what are you doing? And, you know, you should be doing this. And then you get another clip, a cuff round your ear hole. But nothing more physical than that.
You got shouted.
You got all the time. I think they knew that they couldn't soft soap and to say you on a soft voice. Will you do this?
Was there much swearing by the instructors?
I would say on the basis of what goes on today, I don't think there was as much that. I mean, there might have been groups of them that did it, but it never. I don't know why. I was perhaps fortunate all along. I never took to swearing. I didn't think it was essential.
So drill. You also seem to have done a lot of PT. Tell me about the PT, physical training. What sorts of PT did you do?
All I can think of is just very basic. There'd probably be some good things about it, but it's something that I never really, I can't say I enjoyed it, but it didn't bother me. It was something we had to do, and that's how I looked at it.
Well, a lot of marching. I mean, route marches.
The route marches were a bit rough at times because it depended how far they took you. You see, it could be about 3 or 4 miles, you see. So that was a bit hectic, but it wasn't very often we did these route marches. I think it was between 3 to 5 miles we did in one stretch.
Now, any other types of training you did there? I know you did more, so I'll come to that, but I mean any other basic training?
Such as?
Any rifle weapons training?
No, we didn't get any there. No, don't remember that at all.
Well, tell me about the Morse training then, because they do start you as a trainee wireless operator, and at the start you're going to be a ground operator. You do volunteer. Tell me about the Morse training then.
Well, I had no idea what I knew. I'd heard of a Morse code, of course, before I went in, but I didn't know anything about it. Not the foggiest idea, but it's something that I took to right away from day one. I mean, quite a few people, one of my friends went into the same course, and he had to give up after a day, or 2 days rather, trying these signals he couldn't make. You know.
Now, how was it also, you seem to have done it at the Blackpool tram shed.
There were the three different places, and we didn't necessarily go to the same one each time, but it was just for the same training. You sat at long tables with the Morse code key on your right hand side and a pad in the middle to put your notes down, and that was really the establishments that were used for Morse code training.
So you've got here, I'm just as a note, the Blackpool tram shed, the Olympia.
The Olympia, which was the big one, which is still there.
Or Burton's Tailors, which is a big shop, I presume.
The tailor, and there was the first floor we used.
Now, yeah. So you're all sat in rows on total, and then where would the signal come from?
The chap here was organising the messages.
The
was sat right at the front, and he was tapping these things out, and what we had to do. And he was tapping them out, obviously, initially very slowly, until we got the drift of what each letter was, the sound for each letter. And once we got that, then he started to do small words. So it gave you that confidence that if you could make one or two words up when he was saying it, because he was doing it extremely slowly. And I really did enjoy that part of it, I must confess. I always looked forward to it, and I think this is the difference. If you're keen, you are all right, you can. And they used to say anybody fond of singing or used to that sort of thing, they find it easier to understand. It's because it's a sound.
You're interested in music.
And I was always very keen on music and singing. That was always a hobby of mine at one time. No, I think from the Morse point of view, and as it says on there, the last test we had was for 12 words a minute. Now, that wasn't very bad at all, because you eventually were aiming for 20 words a minute, but a passing out figure was 12 words a minute. When we once we'd passed that, we were then ready.
And you had to be able to send as well.
And send as well. Yes, yeah. So all that actually was the basis that we finished then. We'd done our wireless course, so then we were ready.
Now, was there any other? You say wireless, though, but that's just Morse code. Had you done any wireless training?
No.
So there's no.
The wireless training came in later.
So all you did really was Morse.
That's right.
A bit of drill and some PT.
Yeah, that's it.
Now, you volunteered. You passed the course, and you volunteered for aircrew duty. Now, tell me about that. Did they put that to you?
Before I took the final test, they came through asking for volunteers of those people, because all the people that were gathered there were all originally going to be for ground wireless operators. But then the message came through, because they were getting short of aircrew, if anybody would like to volunteer to be a wireless operator in an aircrew, you see. So I said, well, I had a word with my mate and said, well, look, I'd like to volunteer, I said, because I still fancy flying. So that's how we came to get to the next stage, which was, as it says on, was the Yatesbury Radio School. Where we started the flying training well as the wireless.
I'll come back. Now, why you hadn't thought about why they were running short of aircraft?
Oh, yes.
You know now, you laughed. Yeah.
No, but we knew
at the
then.
Time, did you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we knew then. But like I said in there, actually, you don't look at it the same way. Think about how old I was. I was 20. And I thought, well, I was thinking like a very young man. It wasn't so much the glamour of the thing as the excitement of the thing that it brings with it. And not only that, I did want to fly, and I'd never flown before.
So you were just keen on that anyway?
So I was just keen on the idea of having flying and being a wireless operator on the aircraft. That really did entice me.
Now, while you were at Blackpool, did you have any kit inspections and things like that? Or did that start later?
No, the kit inspections didn't start until we got to an established... they would do at the radio school, but it didn't at Blackpool.
And what about any... Was there any... what did you do in the evening? Were you allowed out, you know, in Blackpool? It's not a bad place to be.
Oh, yes, at Blackpool we had a good time.
So what would you do? I mean, is that where you started
Well,
drinking?
We used to go to the odd shows that they had there. They had all the... quite a few leading shows were still on in Blackpool, so as far as cinema were concerned, and the Opera House and all these other things were still there, and that they were putting good shows on, and especially for the forces being there, because we were absolutely must have been hundreds of RAF trainees there at the time, so we'd no problems with that. And of course, dancing, don't forget, in the ballroom.
Would you? Did you go dancing?
Because I'm not a dancer.
So that you didn't go to
that. That didn't bother me.
No. What about? Did you start going to pubs then with your new friends, or do you still?
No,
it's when you got to the air crew. Right?
No, I didn't. I must confess. The only time I was introduced to drinks when we got to an established air crew. Yeah. It started.
So your next thing then is you're there until January. So you're there from October to January, 41. And then you go to the wireless school, the radio school. Was it the radio school, the wireless school? But it's for air crew.
Radio, it said, yeah.
Now, so what do you remember about that place? What sort of establishment was it?
It was well organised. It was the basis then of finding out how you operate. You'd already got your training on the code, doing these sending and receiving messages. So your next stage was to learn a bit more about your wireless operator, the wireless itself, and how it operated, and what to do if it goes wrong, and what to look for. So all that came in.
So tell me about the wireless training then. I mean, how far did you go into it? Because people were interested in wireless then. It was modern and new, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah. Well, I mean, don't forget, it's not like a wireless, the ordinary wireless set. It's a question that you just adapt to eventually. The instructors were very good. They used to go over and draw diagrams about, and then we got the set itself in front of you.
Do you know which set it was, or?
Well, on this kind, it was a very, as it turned out to be, one set you would never see again. It was a basics just of getting used to dialing a knob and doing different things and trying to get station in on it.
So tuning?
And just for tuning generally, yeah.
Now, were you learning about valves and what goes on inside it? What goes on inside it? You know, or were you just learning how to operate? It's like I can operate this machine, but I don't know how it works inside.
No, it was they didn't go into that side of it as much.
So you were just learning to use it, not
to understand it to that extent. That came later.
Now, not particularly difficult, I would have thought, then, if it's just tuning and operating.
Well, no, once you got used to the set and the different dials on it, yeah. That's all there was to it. Like I say, it was really just a basic instruction on actually how to manoure and
Now, were you still doing your Morse sessions?
Oh, yes. They still had to keep keep that going.
Now, were you improving still?
Yes, I was improving then.
How fast were you getting?
I'm not sure. It says on there. Did you say on this one?
No.
I can't just remember now.
But you were getting faster.
Yes. The speed, I think, got up to 21 words a minute.
And you seem to have also done Semaphore and Aldis. Like, you know,
yes. That was in another place, though, that. Another, we'd moved on.
No, that's Yatesbury.
Yeah.
So it is at Yatesbury you did the Aldis, according to your notes.
Yes, it was. Yes, sorry. Yeah.
What was the Aldis? That's just the Morse only flashing light, was it?
That was Aldis. They called it the Aldis lamp. That was a different thing altogether. Just using a hand light lamp, which you flashed the code number on that, and it's sending. And then receiving with the old, what it is, the oldest lamp it was called.
And what about Semaphore? Do you remember that much?
We didn't use that hardly at all. We did have a little instruction about what to do if you had to do a signal, otherwise just the odd thing, whether it was danger or something. You had very, very basic instruction on that.